Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 63, Lord Krishna fights with Banasura. It's number 46. Word meeting, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, the Supreme Lord said, yet what Atta have spoken, Bhagavan, O Lord, from you na to us, Karavama, we should do. Priyam, the gratifying, Tava, of you, Bhavata, by you, yet what, Yavasitam, determined, but that, may by me, Sadhu, well, Animoditam, agreed with. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. Yadatta Bhagavan Stanga Paravama Priyam Tava Bhavato Yadhya Vyasitam Tanme Sadvanumoditam Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Yadatta Bhagavan Stanga Karavama Priyam Tava Bhavato Yadhya Vasitam Tanme Sadvanumoditam Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Yadatta Bhagavan Stanga Paravama Priyam Tava Bhavato Yadhya Vasitam Tanme Sadvanumoditam Bhavato yadhyavasitam Tame sadvanu moditam Vivaravanu vajya Udhattva bhagavan sangha Paravama priyantava Bhavato yadhyavasitam Tame sadvanu moditam Vivaravanu vajya Udhattva bhagavan sangha Paravama priyantava Bhavato yadhyavasitam Tame sadvanu moditam Ladies. Vivaravanu vajya Udhattva bhagavan sangha Paravama priyantava Bhavato yadhyavasitam Tame sadvanu moditam Udhattva bhagavan sangha Paravama priyantava Bhavato yadhyavasitam Tame sadvanu moditam Translation. The Supreme Lord said, My dear Lord, for your pleasure, we must certainly do what you have requested of us. I fully agree with your conclusion. Purport. We should not think it strange that the Supreme Lord, Krishna, here addresses Lord Shiva as Bhagavan, Lord. All living beings are part and parcel of the Lord, qualitatively one with him. And Lord Shiva is an especially powerful, pure entity who possesses many of the Supreme Lord's qualities. Just as a father is happy to share his riches with a beloved son, so the Supreme Lord happily invests pure living beings with some of his potency and opulence. And just as a father proudly and happily observes the good qualities of his children, the Lord is most happy to glorify the pure living beings who are powerful in Krishna consciousness. Thus the Supreme Lord is pleased to glorify Lord Shiva by addressing him as Bhagavan. Bhagavan vacha yad ata bhagavan stanga paravama priyantava bhavato yad yavasitam tanme sadvani moditam. The Supreme Lord said, My dear Lord, for your pleasure, we must certainly do what you have requested of us. I fully agree with your conclusion. When this first comes up, this phrase, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha in Bhagavad Gita, and Prabhupada speaks about what Bhagavan means. You know, the six utterances of Bhagavan. The point being made here is that Bhagavan is addressing Lord Shiva as Bhagavan. Also. This is an important word for us, Bhagavan. Father would speak about it so often. In fact, the first time I went to the temple in San Francisco, 1974, Mr. Jungman was giving class, and he spoke about Bhagavan, six qualities of Bhagavan. So we get the definition of Bhagavan from the Vishnu Purana, from Parashara Muni. In fact, there are a couple of verses. Srila Prabhupada always quoted the one, Aishwaryasya samagrasya viryasya yashasya suya jnana vairagyayoshchaiva shanam bhaga itingana. So that one is translated, full wealth, strength, fame, beauty, knowledge, and renunciation. These are the six utterances of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. These are ones that we're familiar with. I've heard this verse many times. And the interesting point made about this verse by Sridhar Swami, he says there are three pairs of qualities in the verse. And one reason Krishna is called Triyuga is because he possesses these three pairs of qualities. So they go to the Aishwarya, Samagrasya, Virya. So wealth and power, and then fame and beauty, and then knowledge and renunciation. And of those, the three pairs, the two in the middle are considered to be the most important. I just started reading, I hadn't read it before, the Gopal Champu. And towards the beginning of the book, there's some discussion about how Nanda is the greatest of the five sons of Parjanya Maharaj, and he's the middle son. And an analogy is given between him being in the middle and these two qualities being in the middle, the six qualities of Bhagavan. So yuga means a pair. It's like Raghu Yuga, the two Raghus, Raghunath Das and Raghunath Bhatta. So three yuga can mean three pairs. So three pairs of opulences, that's one meaning of the word Triyuga. Krishna or Lord Vishnu is Triyuga. So we have these six qualities mentioned in this verse. And then there's another verse later on in the, not much later on, there's a whole section about Bhagavan in the Vishnu Purana. And this verse that I just read doesn't actually mention the word Bhagavan, although Prabhupada said this is how Parashara Muni defines Bhagavan. But there's another word that actually has the phrase Bhagavat Chabda, the word Bhagavan. So that word, is, that verse is Jnana Shakti Balaishwarya Virya Tejang Shesheshataha Bhagavat Chabda Vachani Vina Heyar Gunari Bhi. Complete knowledge, vigor, power, sovereignty, potency, and radiance, devoid of undesirable qualities, and so on, are expressed by the word Bhagavan. So we see how some of them are same and some of them are different. And sometimes some of these words are translated differently also. For example, when Gopi Pranadana Prabhu translates this, the first verse that I read today, he would often translate Aishwarya as sovereignty. We used to take it as wealth. Now the reason he translates it as sovereignty is because the root of Aishwarya is Ishvara. The Ishvara has Aishwarya. So the Ishvara, the controller, has wealth, of course, like the king is, has a lot of wealth. He has control over wealth. But he actually has sovereignty. He has control over a big area and people and so on, kingdom. So that's the one idea. And the word Shri also we know is translated in various ways. It's often taken to mean beauty, it's taken to mean wealth and opulence. In fact, I just heard this the other day, it was something I'd always wondered about. In the it's a sixth chapter, right? Suchinam Srimatam Gehe Yogo Vrashta Jayate. It says that the fallen yogi will take birth in a family of Suchinam or Srimatam. So Suchinam means a Brahmin family. And Srimatam probably translates it as Vaishya family. So I've always wondered, why does Krishna later in the ninth canto, he says among the Papa Yoni, he includes the Vaishyas. So why in one place are it's considered a good birth, and in another they're considered to be Papa Yoni? So apparently there are different kinds of Vaishyas. And I just heard in a lecture the other day, Prabhupada said Srimatam means a wealthy Vaishya or a Kshatriya, he said. Because what does it mean? Literally, it just means one who possesses a lot of opulence, Srimat. So it means you'll take birth in a family where you won't be poor, basically is the idea. Your material necessities will be taken care of. So you might be in a Kshatriya family or a wealthy Vaishya. Just like we have different kinds of Vaishyas. Somebody's a dirt poor farmer, basically subsistence farmer. That's a Vaishya. And somebody's a wealthy merchant with millions of dollars. So they're both Vaishyas. So this Srimatam in the sixth chapter refers to that rich one, and maybe the later refers to the dirt poor farmer trying to make it. So I think in any case, these words are sometimes translated somewhat differently in different verses. So here, Lord Shiva, he's described as Bhagavan because he possesses these qualities in full. So this of course raises the question of the relationship between Lord Shiva and Lord Vishnu, their different positions. Now, Prabhupada would generally translate this word Bhagavan as Supreme Personality of Godhead. In fact, many of the places where it comes up is in the context of Vedanti Tattva Vidas Tattvam Yat Jnanam Advayam Brahmeti Paramatmeti Bhagavan Shabdyate. The Supreme Absolute Truth has three features. One thing interesting about this verse is it says the Absolute Truth is Jnanam Advayam. The Absolute Truth is knowledge. You can see that kind of sounds like some kind of impersonal idea, isn't it? Jnanam Advayam, non-dual knowledge. Well, Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur, maybe taking from Sridhar Swami, the original commentator, says jnana means consciousness. Chit. Chaitana means basically mean the same thing. Sometimes we say full of knowledge, eternal, full of bliss and knowledge. But what does knowledge mean? It means awareness, consciousness. It really means consciousness, the chit focus. It's like we're all conscious. So full consciousness. So the Absolute Truth is consciousness and conscious. Conscious, fully conscious entity. He has three aspects, Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. So Prabhupada would often say, so this is the three features are the impersonal Brahma Jyoti, the Paramatma, super soul within the heart, and Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Bhagavan is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now this phrase, I know in Tamal Krishna Goswami's book, it's called, but he discusses this phrase, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and how appropriate it is. But there's something about this phrase where if you try to dissect it, it kind of explodes, like trying to open an atom, you know, the power comes out. Because really, grammatically, what does it mean exactly? You can take each word, maybe this is a little dangerous to do, but let's live dangerously, right? In fact, the first word is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Means, it doesn't say a Supreme Personality of Godhead. The is called a definite article. So that means there's only one Supreme Personality of Godhead. Supreme, of course, Supreme is supreme. Everybody knows what Supreme means. And personality. Today we talk about personality in different ways. This person has a nice personality, he said. But we use the word personality, usually it means, just like today you might say a celebrity. A celebrity is a personality. We use the word personality as kind of a glorified way of saying person. That means a notable person, basically. And of course, personality also has the idea of personhood. If there is such a word, personhood. Actually, if you look up person in the dictionary, you'll only get human being. There's no question of any other kind of person. Animals aren't persons, according to the dictionary. Only humans. Person means a human being, basically, according to the dictionary. So, personality of Godhead. One thing I was thinking, one reason this came to my mind was that a lot of times when devotees speak to new people, they use phrases that are unfamiliar to people. We just think they'll understand what they're saying. So if you say, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then they say, the what? Huh? Actually, I come across this all the time because when I talk to people and they ask me what company are you with, and I say, back to Godhead, they say, back to what? Godhead. God in head. People aren't familiar with the term. In any case, personality. One day I was thinking how actually Krishna has different personalities in the sense that he has his Dhirodatta, Dhirodatta, Dhiralalita, and Dhiraprashanta. They're kind of like different personalities. So we could say the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is his Dhiralalita personality. This is kind of a rustic interpretation, you might say. So anyway, so how we get to Godhead. So I did a little research, and Srila Prabhupada launched Back to Godhead magazine. Particular interest to me. So what did Prabhupada mean with Back to Godhead? Now, if you read the very first issue of Back to Godhead, Prabhupada, he quotes this Archbishop of Canterbury. Of course, it's wartime, and Prabhupada's quoting all these different people saying what we should do, how can we solve this problem, this scourge of war that's been dragging on for years already. 1944, Prabhupada launched back to Godhead magazine, so the war had been going on for several years. Millions of people being killed, all of Europe tragically in flames. So it was a big, big problem, obviously. So the Prabhupada was quoting different people what to do, and he quoted the Archbishop of Canterbury. And the Archbishop of Canterbury said, our resolve must be back to God. Prabhupada puts this in all capital letters. That's the best. Well, he was using a typewriter, so he couldn't put anything in italics. He just put it in capital letters. Our resolve must be back to God. So there's a couple of paragraphs, short paragraphs he quotes from this Archbishop of Canterbury. And the second one, he also says, back to God. That is the chief need of England and of every nation. So it's pretty clear that when Srila Prabhupada used the term back to Godhead, he actually meant back to God. Our resolve must be back to God, and Prabhupada used the term back to Godhead. In fact, his very first article in that issue is Godhead and His Potentialities. And there Prabhupada is clearly talking about using the word Godhead to mean God. Now generally the word Godhead is usually, it's sometimes used in theology. Now today it's really not in vogue. People don't use it. It's a little bit archaic. But in some theological discussions the word comes up. For example, in Trinitarian theology, it means those the Christians who believe in the Trinity, especially the Catholics, I don't know if any others do, maybe. So they talk about the Trinity. They talk about the Trinity as the Godhead, made up of three different parts. So in one sense, I would say you can think of Godhead to mean Brahman, Paramatman, Bhagavan. These three aspects together, you can say this is the Godhead. And within that Godhead, there's a personality, and he is supreme. But if you just try to say, you say the supreme personality of Godhead. Now, getting back to this, the definition, Prabhupada using the word to mean God. Now, of course, Prabhupada so many times, he said, we want to go back to home, back to Godhead. Prabhupada said hundreds of times. So whenever we hear that, we think, well, it's a place. It sounds like a place. We're going to go back to Godhead. It's a place. What does Prabhupada mean? Does he mean back to God? Or does he mean back to some place that he uses the words interchangeably? Now, it seems to me that he does this. That Prabhupada, he doesn't strictly stick one sense of the word. And he does mean back to God sometimes, and sometimes he means back to the place of Godhead, that spiritual world, back to Vaikuntha, back where we came from. And in fact, right in this first issue of BTG, as I was reading, I was trying to settle on something. Oh, Godhead means God. And then Prabhupada comes up with other phrasing where you think, well, now it seems like he's talking about a place. So it does seem like he does both things. So now the idea of the Supreme Personality of God. So when I talk about unpacking it, what you want to do, naturally we think, look at the phrase, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So you have the Godhead, and you have the Supreme Personality of that Godhead. So that would imply that there are other personalities of Godhead. And Prabhupada uses this phrase too, the personality of Godhead. So is there a distinction between the personality of Godhead and the supreme personality of Godhead? Do we want to put Krishna as the supreme personality of Godhead? I think we do, but Prabhupada doesn't restrict it to that. Again, getting back to this Bhagavan. Prabhupada calls Bhagavan the supreme personality of Godhead, whether it's Vishnu or Krishna. He calls him the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it would be nice, because that is, it would make more sense grammatically. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is Krishna among the other personalities of Godhead. But Prabhupada doesn't restrict it to that sense. I did a quick search on the Veda base just for Vishnu, comma, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and I got 120-something hits. So there are other ways to phrase that, so there's probably a lot more places where Prabhupada uses or identifies Vishnu as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So in any case, Lord Shiva is not the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But what we find in the Bhagavatam and other places is that he's glorified just like the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's quite striking, actually, some in different places in the Bhagavatam where prayers are offered to Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva especially, where the phrasing is exactly the way you would glorify Lord Vishnu. They're called the supreme controller of the universe, the super soul, time, the controller of everything. All of these, this terminology that's used to glorify Krishna. So, I was listening to translations of the Bhagavatam, and I was listening to some of these, and I thought, well, what does Prabhupada say about this? Because it's so clear. One of the examples is Hiranyakashipu, when he glorifies Lord Brahma. Of course, maybe he's flattering him because he's trying to get something. But he uses all these hyperbole, you can say, to glorify Brahma. And they're all things about that you would glorify Lord Vishnu, God. So many phrases that he uses. So I'm thinking, how does he address this? He's calling him, of course it's Hiranyakashipu here, so maybe it doesn't matter. But he's not the only one that does it. The demigods do the same thing. They do it for Lord Shiva when they, after the Daksha Yajna fiasco, then they go to Kailas, and they're also glorifying Lord Shiva using these kinds of terms. So what does Prabhupada say? Actually, I have one for you here. Yeah, here's one. Here's the one about Lord Shiva. And here's a couple of things the demigods say. Well, this is in the churning of the ocean, milk ocean. That's another place where he's glorified, just like God. One thing I came across that I thought was interesting, that Lord Shiva, because Vishnu was already there when the milk ocean turned to poison, because he was there as Purma, and he also appeared as Dhanvantari. So he could have drunk up the ocean. But he wanted to glorify Lord Shiva, so he allowed him to do it. When the demigods are asking Lord Shiva to help them, then they call him the super soul of all living entities. You are the cause of bondage and liberation of the entire universe because you are its ruler. So Prabhupada says in the purport, Lord Shiva is one of the Ishwaras, or the controllers known as Shaktyavesh avatars. Now, generally he's called the Guna avatar, but of course, technically, you could also say Shakti Avesh, because Shakti Avesh means he has, Avesh means to descend. So Krishna's potency has descended within him, his Shakti. So then Prabhupada continues, therefore he can be addressed as having the qualities of Lord Vishnu, because he's Shakti Avesh avatar. Another place we see glorification of a Shakti Avesh avatar is in Prithu Maharaj, when Bhumi Devi is glorifying him. So you think, it sounds like she's glorifying Lord Vishnu, but he's clearly a Shaktyavesh Jiva, not Vishnu Tattva. Now, Lord Shiva, of course, he's sort of in between. Actually, Lord Shiva is so close to being Vishnu, practically he's Vishnu. He's Vishnu, and the only thing wrong is that he consorts with the material energy. He's touched, because Vishnu never touches. He's completely transcendental. But when Vishnu wants to touch Maya, then that's Lord Shiva. That's really the only difference. So that's why he's in a special category. He's practically Vishnu. He is Vishnu, but a little disguised. There's like a little haze over him, something like that. So all these qualities of Lord Vishnu, it's almost as if that we're saying, or that those who are glorifying are saying, you are Lord Vishnu, but you're playing this role as Lord Shiva. So Lord Brahma, the same Prabhupada makes essentially the same point when he talks about how Hiranyakashipu is glorifying Lord Brahma, that he's a guna avatar, so he's an incarnation of Vishnu, therefore he can be addressed with these great qualities. These great qualities can be ascribed to him, just as they're ascribed to Lord Vishnu. So these are some thoughts on this, because of this point being brought up here about Lord Shiva being addressed as Bhagavan by Lord Krishna. But there's a whole other side of this. I could have taken this class another direction. The loving relationship. That's so sweet. One thing I was thinking was, sometimes there's an idea that there's this competition between the Vaishnavas and the Shaivites, and maybe there's some implication that we don't like Lord Shiva somehow because we're Vaishnavas. Certainly it's not like that at all. Vaishnavanam, Tashambhu. We love Lord Shiva. He's such an attractive personality, actually. And he does so many wonderful things. He has many wonderful pastimes in the Bhagavatam. And he's so compassionate. Look how compassionate he is. Look at the personalities that he deals with. The lowest of the low. That's his job. He delivered them. So he's a wonderful personality. He deserves all of our praise and glorification. So the verse again, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, Yat Ata Bhagavan Svangnaha, Paravama Priyantava, Bhavato Yad Givasitam, Tanme Sadvanumoditam. The Supreme Lord said, My dear Lord, for your pleasure, we must certainly do what you requested of us, you have requested of us. I fully agree with your conclusion. I just want to make one more point about this, Krishna using the first person plural. This came up some time back and there was some question about it. So it's just a rhetorical thing, and it's kind of old-fashioned, where you say we instead of I. It's like Prabhupada would often do it. We came to America in 1965. So it's just a kind of a style of speech, which is basically not really done. So it's called the royal we, technically. And it used to be reserved for royalty, at least in one time in history. So maybe if you say it now, you sound a little either archaic or proud, too proud. But the Lord Krishna, certainly, he can say it. He's certainly the royalty par excellence.
Does it mean that he also came with Krishna?
Okay, questions? Well, let's go on the ladies' side. Let's start over here. Time to get left out. Mother Urmila, our guest, with the first question.
I'm not usually in the same room with my boss.
Mother Orma is one of our longtime associate editors at BPG. He helps us a lot.
So I have a question about Lord Shiva and the difference is that he's enjoying the external energy, the illusory energy. So I was trying the illusory energy. That's what it means. Mm-hmm. Anything that appears to be a value without relationship to me. That's the definition of illusion. And in fact, Lord Shiva is often identified as being the personification of ahankara, a false ego.
Now, Prabhupada, I'm just reading some things about Lord Shiva, of course. One thing is he doesn't really enjoy. We see Lord Shiva. Is he enjoying? Yeah, enjoying. He sits under a tree naked and he meditates. He's always meditating on Sankarshan. So he consorts with the material energy. We know, we hear about in the Brahma Samhita that about the golden, of course there's the Shiva Linga and the Yoni, so that represents the Jivas coming into this world through the combination of Shiva and Parvati. But it's not like he's enjoying, in fact he's controlling the material energy. In fact, Prabhupada says that even though he's an incarnation of Rajaguna, he's not touched by it and not affected by it. He's completely transcendental, Prabhupada said. I just read it in one purport. So, you know, in some ways it's inconceivable. How is he? He's right there with the material energy. And there's something going on between Lord Shiva and the material energy. There's some contact there. But because he's powerful, he's Vishnu, you can say. He can touch the material energy and really not be affected by it. Although in one sense, you can say he's different than Vishnu because of that touch. But the picture we get of Lord Shiva is that even if you just take him as a 100% pure Vaishnava, even Vaishnavas in this world, we're touching, of course we're not pure Vaishnavas, I'm not, but the liberated souls are in this world, touching this world, interacting with matter, but not being touched by it. So we can see that as analogous to also his connection with Maya there, but it's not exactly there. That's the way I would see it. Something else? Mahabodhi? Still got your mind and your tongue like last time?
correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe I read in Creation that if there is not a suitable jiva to take the place of Lord Shiva, then Lord Vishnu takes that place.
Lord Brahma you're talking about. Lord Brahma, not Lord Shiva. Yeah, Lord Shiva is in his special category. But Lord Brahma is generally a jiva, but sometimes Lord Vishnu will take that post with Lord Brahma. Now, one thing about Brahma, of course, I mentioned this often, that Brahma is, he's also an incredible personality. This body, this universe is the body. He's the jiva for the universe. And the Paramatma is Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. This body is conceived of universal form. So the soul of that universal form is actually Brahma. And the super soul is Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. So Brahma is quite an amazing personality. He's also very much empowered by Lord Vishnu. Okay, over here, Tridakram. Oh, another thing.
I was just going to mention briefly, because you said that you believe that Catholics were pretty much the only Christians that believed in the Trinity. But I've done interfaith preaching for a long period in my group, much, much, much more than I've done. But I was interfaith preaching with the Seventh-day Adventists, who also came to me with me to Krishna House, but they absolutely believe in the Trinity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, I wrote to the Seventh-day Adventists. They're so hung up on the seventh day of the Sabbath. I was on their website. I was just wanting to see what their website looked like. And I sent in a question. How do you know which day is the seventh day? Do we know what day is Sunday? I don't even know how we arrive at what day is Sunday morning. So they wrote me back, and they didn't have an answer. It said, search the website. It's not on their website. I thought, something so important, you know, is what that you have to observe the seventh day as the Sabbath. But how do you know what day is the seventh day? Anyway, give it down to you.
When the living entities under undoubtedly six opulences or some of the six opulences, the tendency is they become proud, or they easily become proud and fall from the position. There was a nice case of this king Nahusha. He was promoted to the heaven. He was an earthly king. He went to the heavenly planet. He became king there. So he fell down back to earth after becoming offensive. So Yudhishthira asks, how have you gotten this pitiable situation? How you come to this? And he says, when the living entities gets wealth, despite how controlled they are, they become affected by it some way or the other. And that was my position, my stomach. So it seems like these opulences, I mean, the living entities can have it to some degree, but if they have a lot, then it's not really for them, the stomach.
Well, if you're not Krishna conscious, whether you have a lot or a little, it's still a problem. Whatever you have, you're proud of it. The proper is proud of it, plenty. Prabhupada was, I was just reading a section of the, about the universal form, and Prabhupada there explains that all the opulence we have, it comes from the universal form. What is the universal form? It's material energy. So all the opulence we have are given to us, you can say, from the universal form, and they're meant to be then used in the service. They belong to the universal form. They belong to Krishna. So that's how we protect ourselves from being proud of these opulences, is by engaging them in the service of Krishna in some form. Of course, we don't serve the universal form exactly directly, but we serve Krishna. So that's how we, that's our solution. That's the only solution. We get wealth, we get whatever, fame, beauty, all these things. We have to use them in the service of Krishna, and they're purified. We don't get contaminated by them that way. Remember that they're Krishna's. They're borrowed, and they'll be taken away.
I'm wondering, at Manasi Ganga, over again, Sanat Goswami, Bhajan Kutir, Shiva Linga, obviously he worshiped. But yet, Srila Prabhupada didn't really seem to encourage worship of Lord Shiva and the Vaishnavana Mata Shambhu. And so I'm wondering, this is something that sometimes would come up when I'm company president and the congregation members couldn't quite get it. You know, why we didn't do this, because it seemed to be exclusive. And there are many, you know, members of the congregation of the Vaishnava tradition in the Vedic worship, Is that just to prevent confusion, or what was the, do you have any idea?
I think it's because we have so many gods already to worship. We don't have room for any more. I would say if you're a devotee of Balaji, you go to Balaji, there's only Balaji there. We have so many. I think it's just, you know, there's a tradition. In fact, there's one letter where Prabhupada wrote where he says, in our temples, we should install Radha Krishna, Gaur Nitai, and Jagannath Baladev Subhadra. So that's pretty much, and this is our, especially since the time of Lord Chaitanya, this seems to be the tradition. So my answer is, well, there's a tradition according to our Sampradaya. And then, of course, Prabhupada's instructions. Now, why he did it exactly, that's all I can say. He didn't want to complicate our lives. He was trying to make us really be focused. Just like that whole, the thing that came up about Ganesh. The Prabhupada says right in the Nectar Devotion that devotees should worship Ganesh. Then when devotees wanted to do it, Prabhupada said, no, unless you give me $100,000 a month, then you can worship Ganesh. So he just didn't want devotees to get distracted from by different things. But that's all the only thing I can see. And even though we have some temples, a few places in the movement, I was just in Mumbai, and they have Sitaram, Lakshman, Hanuman, we have in Potomac, just a few places around the world. But generally, you know, the deities of Prabhupada, as I mentioned, we worship them. So that was Prabhupada's way. But at the same time, we don't, of course, we respect the Lord Shiva. That's, I think in the movement, sometimes there was maybe a little bit too much of this, where devotees were really down on the demigod and down even Lord Shiva. Obviously, we can't have that attitude at all. So, the final answer, the answer of Prabhupada is that, well, Prabhupada didn't give us Lord Shiva to worship and Shiva Linga, so that's why we don't do it. I'm not sure he explained ever. Like, the only way to answer definitively is if he said, this is why I did it. Otherwise, you can sort of guess why he didn't do it.
And along these lines, did you ever hear what kind of move from Sanatana Goswami had in his worship of Shiva Linga, one of the Kameshwars?
Yeah, now the other thing is, in Vrindavan, the whole other world, obviously, literally, it's a whole other world. And, there are different forms of the Lord, too. Lord Shiva is one thing I was going to mention, didn't have time in class. Lord Shiva, he lives outside the material world. Mahesh Dham is outside Devi Dham. So even though he's in the material world on Kailas, that's a different, it's another form of Lord Shiva. In fact, Kailas isn't even his place, it's Kuvera's place. But because Kuvera pleased him in some way, then he's there guarding, or at least his associates are guarding. So he has affection for Kuvera, so he lives there. And Ilavrita Varsha, I think that's where Kailas is, mentioned in the fifth canto, where he's offering prayers to the Lord. So in any case, there are different forms of Lord Vishnu. So in Vrindavan, the original form, Lord Shiva is there, in his form as a Dham Vasi, protecting the Dham. So naturally he's, you might say, in a higher status in Vrindavan Dham than he is on Kailas Mountain as a demigod. He's more like a demigod there, and where he's a pure Krishna Bhakta Brajvasi. He's a Brajvasi living in Sanatana Goswami's Bhajan group here. There are four, right? Four dikpals, protecting the directions of Braja Dham. Four directions. Incarnations of Lord Shiva. I think it's not up, but I don't know if you have your hand up over there.
You mentioned that of opulences in the middle, which were beauty and fame, Krishna, significant. What does that mean, most significant?
I didn't hear an elaboration of it, but of course with Krishna and Lord Chaitanya also, it's said to be their most attractive feature is their beauty. The other thing is that beauty, what does beauty mean? Anything that attracts. The beauty is in the eye of the beholder. That force of attraction, whatever it is beautiful. I remember seeing a cartoon one time. There was two generals looking at a painting on a wall in a museum, and it showed a nuclear explosion. And one said to the other, I don't know what art is, but I think that's beautiful. So beauty's in the eye of the beholder. So beauty is what attracts. So in that sense, that's why it's the most powerful. But it said about Lord Chaitanya, this is how he conquered, defeated so many people, just by his beauty. And of course, Krishna's beauty is attracting the whole universe. Yes.
I was thinking how with the material energy, it has to serve. And our philosophy, everything's serving, pleasing, relationships. So Durga, who's the material energy going to serve? So she's doing her service as a service to please Krishna, but Krishna doesn't. He's indifferent to Durga. So Lord Shiva is Krishna being able to accept her service, but that's the key. So it's a service that he's doing.
Yeah, it's a service relationship. All right, let's stop here. Srila Prabhupada.